Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Cybersecurity is the topic today. We welcome back a couple of real experts on the topic to answer my questions and your questions. Robert Griffin is founding dean at the University at Albany for the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity, Jim Hendler. Now, according to the last bio I saw, Tetherless World Chair of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences and the Director of the RPI Institute for Data, Artificial Intelligence, and Computing. I'm sure there's more, and we'll find out. Jim has advised the White House on IT issues. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Cybersecurity after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we'll talk cybersecurity with Jim Hendler, Tetherless World Chair of Computer Web and Cognitive Sciences and Director of the Future of Computing Institute at RPI. Hendler has written a number of books and scientific articles on the topics of artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and the World Wide Web. Bob Griffin is the founding dean at the University at Albany for the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity. Before that, he served for decades in local and federal governments, including serving as acting undersecretary for the Science and Technology Directorate at the Department of Homeland Security. If you have a cybersecurity question, I invite you to call 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Bob Griffin, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Good. Welcome to the most depressing hour in radio.
Oh, no, I can say that about almost every show I do, as a matter of fact. You were here already today, were you?
Yes, this is my second stint here today.
I wonder, did you crash in the green room for the balance of the day?
No, I ran back and did work.
That is great.
Public servant.
Jim Hendler, your title changes often, but I think I have it correct. You brought sandwiches. And first, let's get that out of the way. We had a caller last time who mentioned he was eating a sandwich, and Jim brought sandwiches for us today, and it's delicious. Thank you.
It's become a running joke. I just couldn't resist.
Very good.
But next time, Ray's bringing the beer, he promised.
So. You know what? The way we were talking before the show, I think I better bring some single malt or something here. You guys seem like you're aficionados, so I'll have to... I'll have to do that next time. A lot of stuff to talk about, and you're right. It's a scary and depressing world that you guys inhabit. This article from the Register said, "We're just shouting into the void," says U.S. watchdog, offering cybersecurity advice. Federal departments ignore almost 60% of IT defense recommendations. Is it as dire as all that, my friends?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The federal systems are woefully underprotected. They're obsolete. The ability to bring new programs and protections on through the procurement process is Byzantine, and generally it becomes a secondary or tertiary responsibility and is ignored until there's a problem, like a hack or when they get beaten about the head and neck by Congress.
And then, you know, I think over on the industrial side, you have two big problems. One is they're just having trouble finding people. But the other one is that the cost of the attack, even a ransomware attack, tends to be less than the cost of insuring against it. So a lot of the companies aren't willing to do the work they need to do to be safer.
Did you touch upon this during the roundtable a week or two ago? I thought you had mentioned that, or maybe it wasn't you. You know, companies say, okay, we're going to lose X number of dollars if we're hacked, but it costs way more. Mm-hmm. We got a balance sheet here. We'll just go with the flow.
Yeah, and it turns out the average ransomware attack is roughly about 5 to 10% of a company's sort of like annual income, which is, you know, sort of enough to be painful, but not so much that the company is going to change its IT systems to fix it. And so we really do have an issue there. The other thing is the government organization that they're talking about there is something called CISA.
CISA, yeah.
CISA is, I used to know what that stood for,
cyber infrastructure.
Occur.
Yeah.
But they put out alerts. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you go to CISA.gov and look at the alerts page, you know, I mean, tons of them. And, you know, who's attacking who, what's out there, are there new threats? Part of the problem is there's so much of it that it's hard to follow.
Yeah.
But somebody has to follow it.
Some of it has to be pretty tough.
Yeah, but what Jim's hitting on is, I think the scale of cyber attacks on the federal agencies is enormous. I'm talking millions of attacks a day. This is a constant issue of different types of probing and attacks and the other issue that Jim, I thought you were going to raise, and it's an important one, is it's really hard for the federal government, frankly, the state government, local governments, to retain really good cyber personnel, because industry can't get enough good cyber professionals. They pay a lot more than the government does. So, I mean, that has been a known gap in the government since the late 90s, and they still haven't fixed it.
And, you know, the other thing that really contributes to this is the older your system is, right? The less you've patched it and things like that, the more likely there's some kind of attack or something you're susceptible to. And a lot of the, my favorite story, it's 20 years old, but I went to see the CIO of the United States of America, right, to show him a demo. We couldn't get his system booted. It was running Windows, you know, six
Vista
levels.
Or
so I just pulled out my iPad and we just did the demo on the iPad, you know. And it's, again, my iPad was safer than his machine, but his machine had so much crap built onto it to keep it, quote, safe, unquote, that... and a lot of those systems, I mean, they've been upgraded, but not at the level they should be and not in the ways they need to be.
But if you think about the hack on the Office of OBM, the Office of Budget Management, all of my data was, I was among thousands of officials who, all of my data, which is, I mean, it gets into every element of my life, was hacked by the Chinese. And I make a running joke that, you know, if you really want to know about me, just go to Beijing, because they probably have more information than anybody else. But Ray, there's a caveat to that. That wasn't necessarily all on the professionals at OMB. They had gone to Congress multiple times identifying this as a problem, and they couldn't get funding for it. So when they got hacked and there was the we need to hang somebody, pitchforks and torches, you know, somebody has got to be held responsible. Really, the people that should have been held responsible were the folks in Congress that refused to take it as a priority and fund it.
You know, this article, and Jim sent several articles that we'll reference here. And by the way, if you want to jump in the conversation, the number is 800-348-2551. We talk cybersecurity today with Jim Hendler and Bob Griffin. This article that we're referencing to begin the show about the federal departments ignoring almost 60% of IT defense recommendations. The agency says the government needs to address four key areas. And the first one, create a more comprehensive cybersecurity strategy. Every time you guys are on, we talk about this. Is there any progress there?
You know, the trick is... I mean, the answer is yes, there's a lot of progress there. The problem is, one, the progress is slower than the change in the attacks. The new whatever yesterday's cyber attack is, right, can't be addressed by something that was fixed a year ago, right? So some of it is that. The other thing is the agency that now really exists to really... do this. Let me say this politely. The previous administration was not a fan of anything that had to do with cyber, because it seemed like somehow that would hurt them in the election.
That is so strange, because the previous administration was run by a quote unquote businessman, and business gets whomped probably worse than government.
Yeah, but I'll let's go there for a second. Right. You know, Chris Krebs, who was the head of CISA under the Trump administration, came from industry, well-respected, but he told the truth. So when there was concerns about the voting machines and all of the deniers were coming out of the woodwork, he stood up there and he said, no, this is, you know, we have done all the forensics. This is not true. And it cost him. It cost him his standing with the administration. It cost him his job. But he did the right thing. So that's sort of the additional pressure that people are under. And the landscape is moving so fast that it's impossible to create a strategy of any significance other than complete honorifics, like, oh, we'll keep everybody safe, because they can't keep up with the technological changes.
Well, and then the other thing, to be fair, is this administration did invest in building up that office. They hired some amazingly good people. The challenge is, you know, it's not like everyone in the government has to do what they say or things like that. So the authorities, and I mean, state government is even worse than federal and local. So, you know, who owns what machines, right? Who controls them? I won't name names, but some of the cities and states I've visited, you know, it's like they have one person who's their entire IT department. And you talk to them and say, you know, do you follow these alerts? He says, yeah, of course. They're in that box over there under the table. And you know, we print them out every day. You know?
And that's why the governor's effort to stand up the JSOC, a joint operations center that's based down in New York City right now, to help both businesses and municipalities is the smart move, because it's not cost effective for small jurisdictions to have the type of sophisticated cyber personnel that they need. So actually, I think the state's moving in the right direction. The other positive that would be remiss, there's some truly excellent work being done in the investigative areas, whether it's the FBI, whether it was DHS, whether it's IRS, certainly Cyber Command. If I could pitch real quick, Andy Greenberg, who is an author for Wired, writes broadly on the issue of cyber, is going to be at the University of Albany tomorrow night, 7:30. It's a free event. He is absolutely amazing talking about the cyber threat.
Let's talk about that in a minute. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim Hendler and Bob Griffin and your cybersecurity questions coming up.
Support for WMC comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association. Helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley, we conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. And Vision Excel Lake Katrine, continuing a commitment to patient care, working to provide optical products and techniques while adhering to safety protocols. Appointments at 845-336-6310.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number if you want to chime in. Jim Hendler from RPI, Bob Griffin from the University at Albany. And Bob, you said there's an event tomorrow.
Yeah.
With the dude from Wired, Greenberg?
Yeah, Andy Greenberg. Yeah, it's the Writers Institute. It's a free event, 7:30 in the Campus Center. He has written a number of books. The most recent one is fascinating because it's almost like a detective novel talking about how the federal government was able to capture the head of the Silk Road in different dark web areas. The other event that I want to pitch, and Jim is the star of this, is that next Tuesday night, and again, this is another free event, we're going to be talking ChatGPT, which is about AI. And we can't, you know, we're at the point where we can't separate cyber and AI anymore. So that's going to be a fascinating event that deserves a lot of attention.
I blame Jim because he's been talking about this, and I finally today got on ChatGPT and started asking inane questions. It's predictably getting inane answers, but it's so cool, and it's so much fun to try, and you can see, you can almost project out 20 years what it will be capable of, and it could be a little terrifying. Let's take a call or two. There's a great article that Jim sent from, I think, Forbes, How Dangerous Are ChatGPT and Natural Language Tech for Cybersecurity? And I want to touch upon that, but let's grab a couple of calls, and we'll start out with Gene in Taconic. Gene.
Hi. This may be too small time for you, but I recently posted some things on Facebook Marketplace, and I freaked out. A bunch of people responded to me and asked that I give my phone number so that they could verify me, and when they called me, there would be a code, and I would get back to them with the code that came in on my text. Well, I tried to do that a couple of times, and nothing has come of this, but I later found out that there was this Facebook Marketplace scam. Yeah. And I just, after I found that out, I was like, uh-oh, who knows who's going to get into my computer? As nothing has happened, but I wondered if you knew anything about this. It seemed to have connected to Google Phone or something like that, which I don't think I had anyway. Yeah. But
all right, Bob, what do you think?
It was enough to freak me out.
Yeah, you know, Gene, it's really healthy to be freaked out anytime you're dealing with the digital community. A little paranoia goes a long way. And a couple things. One is that you want to be really careful about how much information that you do put out there. There are an awful lot of scams in the digital world. Now, with that said, you know, I can tell you that I buy things off of the marketplace myself. I just you trust your instincts. When it doesn't seem right, back out. Don't give a lot of information. Be really careful about giving out your home address. Be really careful about giving out too many pieces of information that someone who could take and triangulate who you are, because that can lead to identity theft.
Yeah.
At the same time, it is a I love the marketplace. Just be careful.
Gene, what do you want? What do you have? Maybe Bob will buy it.
I had several very desirable things, and I was like surprised how many people suddenly responded, and all of them turned out to not come through, and I think they were all scams.
So. Yeah. That,
well, you know, the
there
other.
There you go. I learned.
Go ahead, Jim.
I learned.
Well, I mean, you know, some of it is scam. Some of it is just that, you know, you're on a site where there are a billion people who can look at it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them say, hey, this sounds pretty cool, but then they see the price or then they think about it. But what I will tell you is, particularly now on cell phones, you're seeing more and more of these kind of scams. So once your number's out there, so for example, I now almost every day I'm getting this thing telling me they're going to cancel my Netflix subscription unless I do.
Oh, terrific.
There's things, which is actually pretty cool because I haven't had a Netflix. You know, it's pretty easy to detect the spam when it's something like that. But then I also get one which says, you know, here's Amazon and things like that.
Yeah.
The reputable companies will send you something saying, you contact us.
Right, log
here.
In.
It would say, yeah, don't, you know, not click on this button. Anything you see that sort of says click here for something or things like that, be suspicious of and check these things.
And check where the email is coming from, too. That you can go in. So when you get an email and you think, oh, okay, Amazon really wants to give me $10,000. If you go and you click on the address where it may say on your email, it may say, oh, this is Amazon, but then you see a garbage address, you know, a whole bunch of letters and numbers that has nothing to do with Amazon, you know that's a spear phishing exercise. And it's amazing the number of people who frankly fall prey to that. The other cell phone, you know, talk about sophisticated. What they'll do is they'll grab your cell phone number, and then they'll take a leap, and they will tell you that somebody at your work needs something or is asked to go get something and bring me. Usually it's gift cards.
Gift cards. Yeah.
Gift cards is a big one. Props to CVS. I know of a couple of situations where people have gotten to CVS and had brought these gift cards up, and the folks at CVS actually said to them, "Is this for? Do you know who this is?" And then people will take a minute. So props to CVS for helping with cybersecurity, but be really careful. Even something that's being texted to your phone might not be real.
Yeah, and you really need to, you need to confirm. The thing is, a lot of this is common sense as long as you understand that there are these people out there trying to trick you.
Go ahead.
But that's what makes it hard because, of course, it keeps getting more sophisticated. And
that's the thing. That's the challenge. 20, 30 years ago, there was not this level of sophistication. So my question for you experts on cybersecurity, in a democracy, it's often you talk about personal responsibility. When you're in a free society, you have personal responsibility. How much, given the increasing sophistication and the technical stuff that most of us don't understand of these attacks, how much personal responsibility can the average person have or should they have?
Well, I mean, you're at the end of the day, you are responsible for it. Now, there's a lot of help out there. Most of the banks, the banking industry actually works really hard to be as absolutely secure as they can, and they will flag for you if they think something suspicious. I know my credit card company will send me texts. There are times when they actually will deny a purchase if it seems shady to them. Listen to that. Also understand that I'm not casting moral aspersions on what your proclivity is, but got to be careful on where you go on the web. There are certain sites that, once you go, you're in the lobster trap. So you need to be really careful.
And I would say, the main thing is really the companies should have more responsibility than they do in a lot of cases. And that gets into a whole policy issues we're not going to do. But from the personal point of view,
shouldn't do it.
What I really try to point out to people is think of it like home security, right? You wouldn't leave your front door unlocked unless you live somewhere, out in the rural areas where no one ever comes.
Right.
Right. But do you have a home security system? If you're just an average person, you have locks on your doors, windows, and, you're kind of – here's the thing. If you're living in a high-crime neighborhood, you would do more. If you bought $1 million painting, you would put in a security system, right?
Yeah.
So you really need to think of this the same way, right? If somebody gets a certain piece of information, all the time I'm getting things from people on Facebook, say, a message from somebody that doesn't ring true, so I just ignore it. And sure enough, a little bit later, something appears in their account where the guy says, "I've been hacked." Please do it.
Yeah.
Change your password every so often.
Use password protection programs too, because it's hard to remember passwords. So what a lot of people do is they use the same one, or they put this, they put it right next to their desk. The other thing is be honest about yourself. You're not that beautiful. You're not that important. So when the Nigerian prince sends you messages and offering you millions of dollars, it's most likely a scam.
Oh, my gosh. That was fake? Oh, boy, is my face red.
Yeah.
All right, let's go.
And the other thing, the last thing I'd say is checking. So, it was very interesting. Recently at our campus, the parking service is changing how they're enforcing something. And so they sent mail to everyone on campus.
Oh.
Okay. But it didn't come from a campus address. So most of us are now sophisticated enough that we sent mail back to our campus security guys saying, "Is this real?"
Yeah.
And they actually had to put out a campus-wide announcement saying, yeah, they really are doing
this. Oh, that's so interesting. Let's grab a question about password managers. We'll go to Joel in Saratoga. Joel, you're on. Or not. Hello, Joel. Buddy. Are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I was muted. Thank you, Ray, for taking my call.
Sure.
Jim and Bob, thank you for really bringing this topic to the forefront. It's so important, both on the corporate level and on the personal level. It's really two kinds of cybersecurity. My question on the personal level is our password managers. I had thought about using a password manager years ago, and I thought to myself, you know, do I really want, even if my passwords are encrypted, do I really want all my passwords sitting on someone else's server somewhere? And lo and behold, look what happened to LastPass. So I still keep passwords, you know, squirreled away in a file that's encrypted itself on my computer. What are your thoughts on password managers and what happened recently with LastPass?
I actually am a fan of the password programs, you know, and I'm not pitching any particular one, so I don't want to sound like I'm shilling for any. You know, there's 1Password, there's Norton, there's better password protection on the iOS system. You know, again, I think if you use some common sense, and if you change your master enough times, and you're careful about it, I think it's a good way to organize and to anonymize your passwords. If you get a really, really strong password, the chances of you remembering 15 or 16 really, really strong randomly generated passwords is nil. The other thing that I ask people not to do is don't write down your passwords and leave them in like the notes section of your phone or something that is not protected. That's just a recipe for disaster.
Okay. Joel, go ahead. You want to follow up?
Let me just
I think, you know, I agree with you. I think having very complicated and certainly different passwords because of the whole password stuffing situation where, you know, hackers get a password file and then they start using a password from another site into other sites like your banking and whatnot. Yeah. So you definitely don't want to have the same password. But I guess my concern was, you know, what happened with LastPass is they got hacked. And I think the password vaults got taken, but they don't have the master passwords to those vaults. But they could sit there with a computer and spend time hacking away at them and try to get to your passwords. You know, I mean, it got really close. So that's my only concern with using a password manager,
Jim,
having that out there and them being hacked.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I that particular hack, you know, LastPass had done all the right things. In fact, it doesn't look like that really compromised a lot of that. And things exactly because breaking the kind of encryption they use. I mean, if you have a quantum computer or a supercomputer farm, you could probably, you know, break that in a quantum computer, you could probably do it pretty quick, but we don't have a big enough one yet. But 256K encryption, I mean, we're talking about something which is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of
the other thing, Joe, is that,
break these things.
Is that so, cyber hackers, cyber thieves are like lions, okay? They're going to go after the weakest. If you have a strong system, yeah, and they're going to have to spend hours and hours and hours, and, you know, unless you're a multi-billionaire, there is no return on investment for them.
Yeah.
So they will typically look at something like that and say, or it's not worth time, you know, and move on to somebody who they can steal from more easily.
Bob Griffin and Jim Hendler are with us today at Cybersecurity, 800-348-2551
is
the number.
Think if I can. I absolutely hate dual encryption. I actually hate all these things where I can't do anything unless I have my phone with me and things like that. Use it.
Yeah.
It is a pain, but the security of that just it's like Bob just said, you know, you've suddenly made your stuff way harder than everyone else's to get at. So you've just reduced yourself as a target. So,
all right.
And we know the temptation. It's Murphy's law of cybersecurity, right? Every time you have the dual encryption, your phone is across the room and you're too lazy to get up and go get it. Take the walk. It's worth it.
Okay. Let's go grab one more here before the next break. 800-348-2551, the number. Bob Griffin and Jim Hendler here to answer your cybersecurity questions. Mark in Eastern New York. Mark, you're on.
Thank you. I have a simple question. If you do a banking where you have access to your account, where you look at your account and access your account, obviously with a password if it's digital, how much effort are the banks putting in their digital world with regard to the money that people keep in the bank?
the banks are putting a tremendous amount of resources into protecting their systems, both because there are laws and regulatory requirements, but equally important is that the banking industry is really cutthroat and that it's reputational. When people do get hacked, the competition jumps all over that as a sign of bring your business to me. So they do spend an awful lot of resources. And in fact, I would argue is probably some of the best resourced cybersecurity infrastructure in the country. And I can tell you that a lot of our really good grads are going into the financial sector. That the financial sector is hiring as much, if not more, than the government.
Jim. You know, one of the recommendations some of us have had, and it needs some thinking, but right now in the banking industry, the government, you know, if you have an account in a bank and that bank, somebody robs the bank, forget cyber for a moment, right? The government insures it. As long as the bank has taken certain steps that they have to do, so they have to have a guard, they have to have this, things get updated. Right. A lot of us think that if the government could come up with a way to do that, create some kind of cyber insurance for some of these things. So banks have done it themselves. You know, banks can calculate the losses they get through these things. You know, you can take your ATM card, you can put it in almost anywhere in the world, get cash. I mean, they've put insane amounts of money into doing it. The aviation industry. Every line of code has to go through a huge amount of testing. The problem is these things all cost a lot of money, right? You know, if you're willing to pay $50,000 for the Microsoft operating system, I'm sure Microsoft would be happy to put a lot more time and effort into the balance of security versus... That is just, it costs.
And again, I know I sound like a broken record, though, Mark. You know, make sure that... you change your password on a fairly regular basis. Make sure if you're using your ATM that you're aware of your surroundings. You know, watch people who are standing too close to you. Watch people who might be behind you. Right. Again, you know, I'm a professional paranoid. I mean, that's what I've done for 30 years. At the same time, being aware of your surroundings in any case, but especially when you're taking money out, is just really important and common sense.
We've got to take a break here, gentlemen. We'll be right back with Bob Griffin at Jim Hendler, 800-348-2551. The sandwiches are going down well, and so is the conversation. We'll be back.
Support for WMC comes from Interim Healthcare, working to help people remain in their homes, providing companions, aides, nurses in the Capital Region, Saratoga, and Glens Falls, announcing employment opportunities, interimhealthcare.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang.
Vox Pop Cybersecurity Today with Jim Hendler from RPI, Bob Griffin from the University at Albany's College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take care of a couple of emails here. This one is from Matt. Matt is in Poughkeepsie. At 42 years old, if I want to go into the cybersecurity field as a career, what's the best way to do it? I'm very concerned about the cybersecurity of the country. I'd like to help safeguard us and the world from bad actors. And that's from Matt in Poughkeepsie.
Well, thank you. We go to school. There are certificates. If you don't want to go to school, there is professional training that you can get. I know if I could give a shout out to the BOCES system and the Questar system, even in our own area, they do a wonderful job with their cybersecurity programs at the high school and adult ed levels. Apply to our program, look at RPI. There's a lot of good programs around, and the degree is opens doors. Okay, now whether you've got to do your own due diligence and have good grades and good work ethic, but it is a door opener because the industry is taking accredited programs as a must have for their hiring. And there's an awful lot of jobs out there. And it's a field that's not going to go away. I mean, this is going to continue to grow.
And I would say you want to be a little bit careful and make sure you're going somewhere credible. But, for example, the online – so a lot of people – and, you mentioned you're probably not a college-age kid ready to go quit and go back to college and get a degree. There's a lot of things where you take two or three online courses, get a certificate, that will open the door to a starting place on some of this stuff. And then if you're working for a company, many of them will actually, send you for other courses, let you do things. So it's one of these things where it's not that hard to retrain into it if you've got a little bit of technical background. And if not, you probably have to start with a little earlier. But look online. Almost every college, everything that has a master's program has some kind of variant for a certificate or something like that. So if you can get the master's, great. But if not, that's another
way to do it. Even a pitch for the SUNYs. The community colleges have some really excellent associate degrees. So if you're worried about getting back into the classroom,
Get your feet wet.
Absolutely. But it's a degree that can absolutely pay off for you.
All right. This is from Susan, and I've been thinking about this often. Susan writes, all too frequently we receive notifications from companies that they have had a data breach. They say an insurance company or a doctor's office, they offer a year of identity theft protection from some outside contractor. I have never taken advantage of that until last year when a pension company had a data breach. Of course, it made me nervous to hand over all my personal information, bank account, investment, pension, Social Security, birth date, all the information they need to keep safe. Just how safe are companies who do this? Do you recommend signing up for this when offered or not?
For reputable companies, they do. I'm a little bit nervous hearing all of that information that you had to provide to that company, because that seemed a little excessive to me. And I'm looking at Jim with a very puzzled look on his face too.
Yeah.
I will tell you that the companies, in fact, when all my stuff got hacked by the Chinese, the federal government was, sent me 10 cents in an apology email and said, we'll look out for you in the future.
You got the dime?
Yeah, I got the dime.
Wow, that's bad.
But again, a reputable company, and understand what the limitations are. Things like, LifeLock and CyberChain and some others that...
The other thing I would say is do a little bit of homework. It's so easy nowadays to go say, this company has offered me protection, let me go look. Right? Now, that said, typically if there was a real data breach somewhere and you've got something credible, especially if you've got it like in the actual mail from the company, has your account number on it or something, something where you're pretty sure. So I've had, that happen a few times.
I think a lot of us have.
And I will sign up for those, sure, the year of protection, what the hell, can't hurt. And typically they won't ask for too much because the company will provide them with the information.
So that was the key. Jim, you hit the right on the head. The key to that sentence, though, is that the company already has a lot of that information. So that's why I was sort of looking askance at the amount of material that they were looking for. Again, I don't know your personal situation. I'm not trying to freak you out, but it seemed a little strange to me.
Well, you are, as you said, you are a natural 24/7 paranoid.
Professional paranoid. Yes.
I'm not a professional.
God bless my wife. Yes.
I'm a very good amateur. And here's what I think about sometimes. With all of these letters we have received, and a lot of us have gotten at least one, and data breaches all the time everywhere, is it a possibility that every Social Security number in the United States is already in some dark web spot?
You know,
or a foreign government.
All of them, yes. No, lots of them, yes. But again, the problem is, or the problem, so Bob and I'm less paranoid than Bob about the stuff. And he and I often offline will joke with each other about this stuff. But look, you know, somebody who had my Social Security number, nowadays that's not going to be worth very much. Because no one trusts just that number anymore. You have to have that.
And you're broke because you have kids, so yeah.
And another thing. And, yeah, I mean, so, you know, so, I mean, in a certain sense, part of it is that we have gotten more sophisticated as a society. We are looking for things like that. Some of what's out there, you know, I had a company that was calling to verify my ID, and they were asking things like, you know, which of the following four addresses did you live at in the past 10 years? I'm sitting there going like, you know, how do they know? Answer, it's all out there on the web in publicly available places. But the fact that they're going through that testing means they've done their homework. They figured it out. You know, I'm much more comfortable with them. If we get into private, I teach a course on data and society, and we could get into privacy and things like that. You know, I'm actually less worried in some ways sometimes about cybersecurity than
social media
and what company, and it's not even social media necessarily, but it's online. So the amount of information they're allowed to exchange, the way they're allowed to figure out who you are and what's going on. You know, the laws are just painfully behind the times on this stuff. And cyber guys take significant advantage of the fact that you're using some system fairly heavily, Facebook, TikTok, whatever. There's a company that was doing a lot of stuff with face recognition. And where were they getting the faces? They weren't breaking any laws.
Right.
When you post a TikTok, you say, hey, my name is, you know, so-and-so, and look, here's a picture of me performing. These guys would just take those. And then, you know, on Facebook, if you make something public, they're like, okay, so now I know. And then they just use, you know, data analytics and things to put things together. So the amount of information about us that's out there is stunning. But it shouldn't be confused with cybersecurity, right? The fact that someone knows a lot about what they're going to try to sell me doesn't mean they know how to break into my account. And these things often do get confused, and there are some places they come together. But it's generally the case that if you're careful, you know, if your social media account is hacked, you change your password, chances are you've fixed 90% of the damage.
The other question you have to ask yourself is for what reason would you be targeted? And I don't mean that to sound disparaging, but is there something in your background? Do you have you know, access to information? Do you have a huge bank account? Is there a reason that you would be targeted? Because otherwise, the question is there people hacked 400 and something million social security numbers? You know, doubtful, but B, what would the value of that be? That's an awful lot of computational power that is not paying off for cyber thieves, and their job is to rake in money from the easiest sources that they can get.
All right, one more email, and then we got to jump back here and grab a call or two. This one is from Martha, and it's about the event at UAlbany. Is there any chance that the event with the cyber expert will be streamed? Just a suggestion to stream it, if only audio. Sounds like it would be definitely worth listening to. And that's from a listener in Connecticut, Martha.
Thank you, Martha. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know. The Writers Institute is putting this on. I will find out. It's on the UAlbany website. The ChatGPT event next Tuesday, there is a Zoom link. It will be recorded. All you got to do is register, and you're only registering so we know what the number of people. We're not, you know, it's not like we're trying to figure out who it is that's getting on it. So okay. both events are good. And if you get a chance and you're on YouTube, take a look at the Andy Greenberg stuff. He is absolutely fascinating, and I'm a true fanboy because, you know, I've read him on Wired and Forbes for a while.
All right.
Really interesting.
Let's grab a call from Kathy, who is in an undisclosed location. Kathy, where are you calling from?
I told them. I'm from Seward, New York.
Ah, Seward. Okay. Well, my screener, it's okay. It's all right. Go ahead, Kathy.
Anyway, I was wondering, and you might have discussed this at the beginning of the program. You know, I have not been listening like I usually do. I was on the phone, you know, to every word.
It was brilliant. I'm sorry you missed it.
We talked about birds. We talked about recipes.
Did it have anything to do with all these documents that are turning up everywhere?
So
presidents and vice presidents.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
What I'd like to ask you fellas, because you're such computer guys and security guys, is there a way to build a, you know, like an iPad-style little unit that each president, vice president, congressperson, senator, you know, could have while they're in office that only they can access? It's got no ports. It's got no way of, you know, downloading, that it's set up to just, you know, grab, you know, get documents sent to it and make them available for you to read. And then when you leave office, you turn the thing in.
So, to make you feel a little bit better, they actually already do have that. In fact, a number of the briefing, the daily briefing documents are electronic. There are some particularly sensitive materials that are on paper that are not on any systems. I mean, that's how.
See, now they're as dinosauric as I am. You know, you were talking about passwords. I write mine down on a pad of paper and keep them near my computer.
But so sometimes the best security, though, is you know, they're secure. It's within a secure compartmental area. The materials are not supposed to go in. You can't go in with any electronics. I remember telling my family, you know, you're not going to hear from me for 6 hours because when I go in, you can't have a digital watch, you can't have any digital pen, no phones, no iPads.
Yeah, I understand that.
With a Fitbit.
Yeah, the Fitbit drove people crazy. But so to answer your question, yes, those systems do exist. The issue of the documents also gets into issues of the archive. And the declassification and some just common sense.
These are very different issues, right?
Yeah.
One, you know, and where the relationship is some of the stuff is not done online because of the fear of cyber, which of course means it's printed out and taken home in somebody's briefcase and, you know, discovered some years later that when they were the vice president, when somebody packed a box and didn't notice that this thing had a red cover instead of a
yellow
cover.
But I will note that if I had taken home documents, that I would be in prison right now. So I have no sympathy at all for the three gentlemen in question right now and anybody else who
there'll
has
be more. I mean, they'll
home.
Be looking in Spiro Agnew's old garage before you know it, you know. I think everybody has a document or two. You know, we're out of time almost. And Jim, I know you're the featured speaker next week, right?
Yeah, next Tuesday.
And this is on ChatGPT, right?
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. You and I have an artificial intelligence show coming up, I think, early March.
March 25th.
And I want to ask you so many questions about this. I find it so fascinating. And we never really got to how it can be a problem for cybersecurity or even a solution. You got 20 seconds if you want to elucidate.
Well, you know, the fast answer is a lot of the information about how to protect your computer comes in English, in normal text. It's not like click this button and something happens. You got to read it. Well, things that can help you better understand, access, determine whether that applies to you, those are the good side. The bad side is somebody who's trying to trick you has now access to something that can make a more realistic sounding thing. At the moment, and in fact, there's this very long article that we're talking about, which if you read it very carefully, basically says
It's a wash.
It's a wash.
Well, listen, once again, Bob Griffin, tell us the event, time, and location.
So the ChatGPT event is at 7 o'clock at the eTech building on the UAlbany campus. There is a Zoom link if people want to. All you got to do is register it, and we'll cool. send you the link. Hendler is going to be the one of four really great speakers that we have, and it's amazing. And the region's so lucky to have people like Jim. This is a haven for AI, and I think it's going to be great for the local economy.
You're going to wear a tie for that event, Jim?
I wouldn't recognize him if he did.
He's not even answering. All right. Support comes from ArtSpark.
I never even thought about it.
ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York. Digital marketing services dedicated to artists and their art. ArtSpark.com for consultations. Ed and Nathan Littow are offering immediate full and part-time opportunities for ultrasound and cardiovascular technologies. NLH.org/careers. Once again, thanks to Robert Griffin and Jim Hendler for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Cunliffe screened the calls. Thank you. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Astronomy with Valerie Rapson. And that's tomorrow at 2. We'll see you then.